everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today is The Great Reset and the role of the pandemic to advance its agenda. Virtually everywhere where you look in the major media, print and radio and television, you'll hear people saying the Great Reset. It's a new beginning. It's a new time. It's renewal. It's going to benefit everyone. Well, in previous programs, we have simply showed you the list of names of individuals who are partners in this. These are the policymakers. Now, when Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola, when Goldman Sachs and Citigroup, when some of the largest industrial polluters in the world are partners, I simply have to ask a basic question, using common sense and reason. If over the last 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, or 100 years, these corporations have not increased the well-being or the health of the planet or the health of individuals, then why should I suddenly believe that they have our interest first and foremost today? So to unravel this, we've invited Peter Koenig. That's K-O-E-N-I-G. He is a geopolitical analyst. He is a former senior economist at the World Bank and the World Health Organization, who specialized in water and environmental economics for over 30 years in countries around the world. He currently consults for the Swiss Development Corporation. That's an international agency working with humanitarian aid delivered by the Swiss Confederation as part of its foreign policy to alleviate poverty around the world and promote human rights. Peter also lectures at universities in Europe, United States, and South America. He's the author of Implosion, an economic thriller about war, environmental destruction, and corporate greed. He is a co-author with Cynthia McKinney's book, When China Sneezes, From Coronavirus Lockdown to the Global Political Economic Crisis. His articles are frequently published on Global Research and New Eastern Outlook and other online sites. Nice to have you with us today, Peter.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's been a long time. I'm very happy to be back with you.
The World Economic Forum has been framing its Great Reset agenda within the context of the pandemic, which would impose a radical technocratic-driven regime on the entire planet. Its chairman is Klaus Schwab, and he speaks of the pandemic as an opportunity. In fact, President Biden, an opportunity. Prime Minister Trudeau, it's an opportunity. Boris Johnson, Prime Minister of Great Britain, it's an opportunity. Macron of France, it's an opportunity. Everybody is talking from the same talking points. That concerns me. That's scripted. So an opportunity to make fundamental changes in how we govern ourselves, and that includes economic commerce. But what is most interesting is the idea that the pandemic is an opportunity. The question then is, an opportunity for what? Certainly one thing we can agree upon is that the pandemic has generated an enormous amount of fear. Here in the United States, the population is terribly divided between those who are fearful and want these preventative measures, such as lockdowns and masks and quarantines and social distancing and a vaccine, and then those who oppose it and want to open up the economy. In the meantime, all of these other agendas are unfolding: cryptocurrency, 5G communications, and more sophisticated surveillance monitoring, a complete overhaul of how we work, our school education and our housing is being changed, and new generations of vaccines that have never been distributed in mass to a population before. Your thoughts, please, about this agenda behind the pandemic to, in effect, disenfranchise average citizens and essentially, I don't want to use the word, but I can find none other that is better because propaganda does not do it, brainwash as many people as they can to become passive and subservient to their agenda. The forum is yours.
Yes, thank you very much. Well, I would start saying that it's actually the other way around. This opportunity of the pandemic has been created and it has been created by long hand. I want to go back only to what is called the 2010 Rockefeller Report. But the preparation for what is going on right now has started decades before, has probably started, and I have some evidence for that, right after the Second World War. But let's just go back to the 2010 Rockefeller Report, in which the first scenario, he paints four scenarios, but the first scenario is the so-called lockstep scenario. In this lockstep scenario, we are now in that, we are at the beginning of it, because that implies that there is an invisible enemy, a virus, that suddenly involves or engulfs the entire world at the same time, absolutely impossible under normal circumstances, at the same time that first lockdown, mid-March 2020, and everybody is taken by surprise. 193 UN member countries all are co-opted into this, all conform. Very few, a little bit less than others, but overall, the whole spectrum of the United Nations is part of this. So you really have to ask yourself, who is behind it and who prepared that? And now, of course, it is very easy to come forward and say, well, this enormous disaster that nature casts upon humanity is a unique opportunity to restructure the world. So let's call it the Great Reset. Let's reset everything and begin a new society, a new culture, a new civilization, in which equality will be the prime target, a green economy will be another target, and justice, social justice, will be the order of the day. This is basically what Klaus Schwab and Hillaret, his companion or his associate in the World Economic Forum, is saying. And he actually has said that already at least 5 years ago. He has talked about resetting the world. And immediately, institutions like the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, they join him and saying, yes, we have to go for a new restructuring. They call it a new restructuring. It's exactly the same thing. It's in parallel what they want to do. It's basically a change of capitalism, which is called participating capitalism by Klaus Schwab, so that the whole world would be sharing in this capitalism. In fact, what it is shifting whatever is left of social capital that has been created by the people around the world in all 193 UN member countries, to shift that capital, that's social capital that has been created, upwards. And it's seen, it's very visible. The first year of this new agenda that is unfolding in front of our eyes, in the first year, the bankruptcies that have been occurring because of the economic shutdowns, because of working from home, of closing down all the markets, basically, shutting down at once, basically, the international traffic and traveling and business at all. So this has, as of now, it's uncountable damage has been created by this. But where's the capital going? I mean, there are estimates that say that the disaster costs so far between maybe $20 and $35 trillion. And this is only an estimate nobody can really prove whether it's that or not. In any case, the Federal Reserve has already predicted towards the end, I think it was last October, they had predicted that the U.S. GDP could fall by as much as 35% in over this last year and this year. So saying this means that where does the capital go? This capital that is being lost, it's actually not lost. It's just lost on the stock exchange because the market goes down. But the capital is there. For example, take an airline. You have the airplanes are still there. They're just not flying, but they are still there. The capital is still there. So eventually, these multi-trillionaires, the group of about six or seven the biggest trillionaires in the world, plus their corporations behind them, they just come forward and buy them gradually up. And so the capital is shifted, the people's capital is shifted upwards to a few billionaires, to a few trillionaires eventually, and the people will be stuck without work. The ILO had predicted that already towards the end of last year, they had predicted that the unemployment will probably reach close to 50% at the end of 2020, perhaps up to 2021. Up to 50% of the world's employment will be lost. And I mean, what that really means in the Western world is already a disaster. But what it means in the global South, which is the developing world, it is even worse, because in the developing world, 70% in most countries is just informal work. They have no contracts. They have no social safety nets. No, of course, no unemployment, no structured health services, no own housing, no nothing. So the disaster is there, phenomenal. And it's nobody is reporting about that. Famine may kill up to 200 million people if it really plays out, and if we cannot stop that before. So this is an enormous disaster that has been artificially planted by all those, Gary, that you mentioned at the beginning, who are behind the WEF. And of course, above these people are those that give the commando, which some people call the globalist cabal, which that would be probably my term, or the deep state, or, you know, other terms, the dark state. These people, they are actually destroying the world. They're causing a monster, a massive genocide, worldwide genocide, plus an economic destruction of what has been built up at least during the past 70 years and longer. So this is much, much worse than the crisis of 1928 to more or less 1933 or so. This is much, much worse. No comparison.
I appreciate those insights. Thank you. Now, Peter, when you look at 2005 and 6 and 7, you would have seen an enormous housing bubble. People were getting liar loans, meaning the mortgage brokers were saying, well, you want this $300,000 home, but you only make $25,000 a year. You wouldn't qualify. So let's say that you make $70,000. Now we're going to qualify you. And both the buyer lied and the broker lied. In fact, the entire system was a scam. Then, when the artificial prices continued to increase, people were making fortunes. And then when the bubble burst, everybody pointed fingers. Well, who got bailed out? The people who originated the crisis. Originally, it was a TARP plan, and it was $700 billion. But then we find out that the actual statistics, as close as we could determine, were about $21 trillion or $23 trillion, depending upon whose figures
exactly.
You want. But
exactly.
That's a huge amount of money that was given to the people who caused the problems, even when they didn't need the money. They used the money to buy up smaller companies. They become even more monolithic, more irresponsible, and more monopolistic. So we learned absolutely nothing. It wouldn't matter if it was a Republican or Democrat in the White House. It didn't matter who controlled Congress. The lobbyists were there in full force. Gimme, gimme, gimme. So everybody got. Now, I'm looking again, and I'm seeing one of the ploys that are being developed through this new reset is to have smaller companies, which are inevitably going to go out of business, by the tens, if not hundreds of thousands in the United States, and what they did being taken over by these giant, let's say, industrial cabals who can control an entire industry. I'll just give you one example. Let's say that you watch the bike, you know, where people get up in the morning and they're looking at a monitor and there's someone saying, you can do it. Come on now, let's get into the heavy part. And people are sweating and they're doing it from their home. Then you look in a mirror. This is something relatively new in the last 9 months. And you see someone working out and they're boxing or they're doing push-ups or whatever. And there you see people of all ages and all backgrounds right in their home, right beside their bike, and they're doing that. Well, suddenly, put it together. Now you're quarantined, even if it's lifted. Why go to the gym where you might get infected, you think, when you can just get on your bike and have someone guide you through a really great workout, or do a workout right there in your house, put a mat down, and suddenly you put on your sweats and you're ready to go. Now that saves you. Now you pay $50 a month, I just saw it advertised, for that one service. Well, let's say you have 10 million people paying $50 a month for the service. Now, what are the expenses? What are you manufacturing? You're not. You're giving them a artificial intelligence help designed mirror that you put on the wall, and it has all the programs in it. Now, they can add programs to that. How is that going to impact a person going to the gym, hiring a personal trainer, going out for a bike ride? So suddenly an entire industry of getting fit is going to be challenged by a handful of companies, only two or three companies that control that market. Right now, you could go into a counseling session and you could get a nutritionist to help you with your nutrition. Well, now in comes another one of these screens that you put on a wall, and suddenly it shows you how to buy food, how to grow food, how to make food, and all your nutritional needs. They'll have dietitians advising you based upon your body type and your age and you're pregnant or not. And well, gee whiz, you just pay a fee each month, $50 a month, and you don't have to go and wait in line and sit down with someone. And so what I'm suggesting is that part of the Great Reset is going to hit people in ways that they never imagined, because Americans, not all, but the majority, tend to do what is most convenient, least expensive, and allows them to stay in their comfort zone. So now you've got a few corporate players doing this worldwide, and that really just destroys them. Now, one more thing. I have been a small business person in New York since 1967. I've seen how utterly inflexible the negotiations are between a landlord and a tenant. I've seen some landlords that were decent and realized that if you're a small store owner and you're dealing in food or something that doesn't have a high profit, that you can't be charging a lot of rent. I also remember when the tenant did not pay the landlord's property taxes. But all that's changed. For decades now, the landlord buys the building, but then the tenants pay his property taxes, common use fees, utilities, and rent. And every year it goes up 3%. But when you're out, the landlord can change the rent to anything they want, and they just keep escalating and escalating and escalating. And that means that the 10 to 12 small businesses that used to be on a block, now you might have three: a drugstore, a mall store, and a bank, because the other stores couldn't afford it. Landlord says, well, if you can't pay the rent, someone else will. So now COVID has created a situation that is unique in our history. Now people didn't have to pay rent for 3 months, or taxes, or common fees. That allowed some of them to stay in business, which was a good thing. But a lot of businesses were closed. The landlord says, okay, you're going to still be charged rent. It's just the government's allowing you a longer time to pay me. Well, you're an economist, Peter. You understand that if you have a boutique, you have a record store, you have a dry cleaning store, you have a bakery, you have a little restaurant, you have a bookstore, you're not going to be able to have debt that accumulates that in 6 months, and now it's end of May, which will be over a year, you can't have a year's worth of rent and taxes and common fees to pay the landlord. you're broke. So the businesses that were able to hang on in spite of the lockdowns, I believe that 90% are going to go out forever. They're gone. They will not. They wouldn't have enough money in savings or what they could get from people to stay alive. So that means who's going to take up the slack on those? Who's going to be doing the restaurants? Once again, major corporations come in. They have an unlimited capacity to create debt, and they'll open up gigantic warehouses in every city, and they'll start with one or two, and then they'll go to probably six or seven Chinese, Japanese, French, Italian, American food, Tex-Mex food, all made in the same place and Ubered right to your home. You don't have to go out anymore. You'll get food directly to your home. So I'm seeing that businesses that were the heart of a neighborhood gone forever, which means the neighborhoods are going to be changed radically. There'll always be tenants, but not the tenants with enough disposable income to pay for the services that you once took for granted. Now, everything changes. Who benefits? The corporatists, the people who created the problems, who created the debt, and who suffers? All the small businesses. And now we're supposed to believe under the Great Reset, I think it was Elon Musk said, oh, well, now they'll have the unemployed will have more time to do their hobbies and better things for them. Yeah, if you're the richest man in the world, you can act like a stupid clown and say irresponsible, condescending statements like he is capable of doing. But what if you're that guy that wakes up in the morning and you don't have money, you don't have a job, you don't have a career, you can't pay the rent, you're looking at foreclosure, your kids don't have enough to eat? I don't think that's going to be a day where you're going to be happy singing, putting on Singing in the Rain, and looking to do a hobby. Your thoughts, please.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, I've heard figures from official figures in Switzerland, Germany, and France, which were talking particularly about restaurants and the tourist industry, hotels, and so they say between 50 and 70% of those that are now closed or were closed at the end of 2020 will never come back. And I think that's probably an understatement. So overall, it could very easily be that up to 90% of small business or even medium-sized business will never come back. And so this is part of the economic collapse that I've been talking about before, or we have been talking about before. But now we are talking about more than just the economic collapse. This is a social collapse. This is a socioeconomic collapse, because you affect people's lives with this. These people, they go into poverty, they go into famine. I mean, in the global south, they will suffer from famine. They will probably, many of them, as I said before, will die from famine. And a lot of people, the Lancet has already been reporting on it, not as much as I would like them to do, but they have already been reporting on how suicide rates, particularly among young people who see no future, have been rising very, very rapidly. And we are just at the beginning. Let's put it this way. We are at the beginning of what the Great Reset wants to do. And wants to do is, if they have their way, this Great Reset is actually congruent with what is also called the UN Agenda 2130. So by the end of 2030, When the UN agenda, which has as a mask basically in front of it, has the 17 Noble Development Sustainable Development Goals, but that's just a mask, that's just a veil. Behind this is the implementation of this horrendous plan, and if this plan is implemented by the end of 2030, with all the four scenarios that are painted in the 2010 Rockefeller report, then at the end, you have a picture of a young man who owes nothing but is happy. This is actually the bottom line of the Great Reset. In other words, he gets a universal little salary, and everything else is being supplied the way you said, you know, by huge corporations that produce food. And you will, with wearing masks, you're being prepared, with not going out, with social distancing, you're being prepared to not anymore have friends, to be anonymous, to become an unsocial being. And that's totally against humanity. Humanity, humans are social beings. So this is in my opinion, and I hope I'm not wrong, this is not going to work. It's not going to work because people will not accept it. And I do hope that within the next few months, maybe, or even if it's within the next couple of years, people will really get upset to the point where they just throw out their governments. You imagine, it is absolutely impossible for thinking people that 193 governments, all UN member countries, at once lock down the whole planet, as if a virus could affect the whole planet at the same time. Has never happened, is impossible, and will never happen. So there's something much bigger behind it, and we can stop it. And as an example on how we can stop it, or we could stop it, is recently, I think the weekend before, not this past weekend, the weekend before, there were huge demonstrations in Vienna, Austria. Vienna is a very peaceful city. There's hardly any demonstrations, but there were 10,000s of people were in the streets demonstrating against the COVID measures, lockdowns, closing down of businesses, mask wearing, social distancing, mask wearing, even for kids in school and so on. So they demonstrated very peacefully, were confronted with the police, and suddenly, I mean, there are videos about it, suddenly the police took up off their helmets and walked with the people. Can you imagine that? That I have only one example that it has happened in Chiapas I think it was 1994, 1996, I forgot when the police turned around and walked with the people, actually demonstrating, we are with you, we are the same as you. And if this happens, if we can convince enough people to wake up to this phenomenon, then this may happen. And this is another point. You mentioned that you know, we are at home, we do our home exercises. Many are probably happy for working out of home and not having to go and mingle with people. That's just for now. But think about the new generations. Think about our children. They're in school. They can't. They have, most of them have now, not all, but at least I would say about half in Europe have homeschooling. Then they can go to school again for a month or so, and then there's a new wave of viruses coming in, and then they have to go home again. I mean, all of this is planned. It's ludicrous the way it's planned. And it's ludicrous that people do not understand that this is a game. This is a horrendous game of fear. And I think this is the key, which is different from the 2006, 7, and 8 bubble. There was fear, but it was a different fear. It wasn't a fear necessarily for your life. It was a fear for losing everything. This is a fear for your life. For you, they make you scared of an enemy that you don't see. So they can do everything. They can say everything they want about this enemy, what it does, how it kills you. They can fill up by the media. The media, of course, plays along. They can fill up hospitals, which are in fact empty. You know, I've seen little videos from everywhere, from New York to Hamburg to Berlin, to Paris, where people actually sneaked into these hospitals and made with their cell phones, with their smartphones, made little videos, how people actually, the hospitals are almost empty. You know, this is all a game. Or they're being filled up with other people and being presented to the public as, well, we are so full. You have to be really very careful that you don't get sick. And of course, they make them afraid. And as Goering said already, you know, people that are scared, they do your bidding. And that's exactly what's happening. That's why the so-called authorities, they're all corrupt. They're actually criminal in every one of these countries. They do with the people whatever they want. And then now they are playing the game with the vaccines. Well, they're not enough. They don't come. And we have to plan it properly. So everybody is more anxious because most of the people, I think in the US, it's about 50% and the Euro in Europe also 50% who are so far not convinced. They don't want to be vaccinated. And the vaccination is not really necessary. I mean, there are lots of common treatments, common cheap treatments for an infection like a virus infection like this apparently is. So if there's no vaccine, there's no necessity for a vaccine. Yet everybody is already mentally tied to a vaccine, thinking, well, the vaccine is a solution, but I probably don't want to do it right now. Others, yes, yes. There are people I know from South America who are rich enough to travel to the United States to get vaccinated because in their country the vaccine hasn't arrived yet. I mean, this is the way this scene is run. And we have to stop it, otherwise we will really, it's like a herd of sheep that is running to their own slaughterhouse.
I appreciate those insights. Let us focus on a few things with a more narrow understanding. I believe that we're in another housing bubble, a rental bubble where there is too little supply. People are spending very high amounts of money to rent in some cities, though the COVID has caused some of those like San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York to come down. Still, they're much higher than what the average person can afford. So the average person is spending more and more of their total income on either paying a mortgage or paying rent. And that's created another bubble. The opportunists are coming in and buying up hundreds of thousands of homes, some of these big syndicates, and then renting them. Now, mind you, they don't have superintendents. Something goes wrong, we've seen that a person is on their own. If a water pipe bursts or septic system's clogged up, whatever it is, what you would normally have, proper maintenance, a lot of these don't have. They're just exploiting a market. And yet, no one is talking about this in the mainstream media, that we're in another 2007 economic bubble. When it comes to housing, your thoughts?
Well, yes, this is very true. I can see that here in Europe and particularly in Switzerland. I mean, housing is becoming short. Also, in a sense that, first of all, it's the rents that go up instead of down, since incomes are going down, unemployment is increasing, so there's less money to be spent on rent, and the richer people, they buy up these apartments that are being vacated or that are being other tenants are being dismissed by the banks, actually. So, there's actually this parallel situation with the shortage of housing, which is being pumped up, of course, by the rich people. I have a colleague who is in real estate. He said it's amazing. People, they buy anything. People who have money, they buy anything at a much, much higher price than it would have been worth under normal circumstances. And they buy particularly houses with land around it because they are so scared that eventually they have nothing to eat, so that they have to plant their own food. This is also slowly but surely being propagated by the mainstream media, that there may be food shortages. And so you better have your own little backyard where you can plant something. So yes, this is a whole new game that runs in parallel with everything else. And of course, it affects, again, the people who are unemployed, who have to reduce their salaries. I mean, they call them temporarily unemployed, but they have to renounce maybe to 30 or 50% of their salary and live with half of what they had before, which is almost impossible. So they may be not able to pay their rent or their food, and go into different situations, go move back with their parents or relatives if they have any. This is an absolute disaster that we can stop it if we wake up. We can just go take to the streets and on the barricades and stop this and try to enlist the police to walk with us. And as we have seen in some occasions, to make them realize that they are just part of us, They're the same thing. They would be dismissed by the winning elite class as soon as they don't need them anymore. So we it's up to us now in this situation to wake up. And I think that's what we are doing. That's what you are doing with your show, to bring this to the people, this disaster, to the people, so that they see what they are actually gotten into, and so that they realize they have to wake up. It's a comfort zone which is very difficult to break through. I know it. It's very, very difficult, and I have lots of friends who talk on an intellectual basis. They talk almost the same as we do, but then when it comes down to do something about it, they just don't. You know, they make their appointments with the medical doctor to get the vaccine, and you know, they stand in line, and they play along the game to be on the safe side and be comfortable. And this is of course what fear and comfort. This is what we have to break.
Peter, 10 years ago, I began a series on the Earth's future and tipping points. At that time, there were 7 primary tipping points of concern. There were more, but only 7 were of concern. Now there's 44 tipping points, and we've tipped over half of them, meaning nothing we will do will reverse some of those tipping points, like Antarctica will not stop melting, the Arctic will not stop melting, the great glacier ranges in Canada, South America, the United States, and India will not stop melting. The Himalayas are receding, and as a result, the 7 major rivers that feed off of the Himalayas are having less water to take. The Amazon doesn't spill into the ocean as it once did, and the Nile either. All the water's being consumed. As a result, we have a major water crisis. We have a major heat crisis. We're between a 40 and 400-year drought, the most severe in America's history, occurring in the states such as California, Washington, Oregon, Nevada, Utah, South Dakota, New Mexico, Texas, Kansas, and Colorado. And those states, as wonderful as they are, if you've lived there in the past, the people are nice, but they're simply no longer sustainable. However, nor is Miami, nor is South Beach and Fort Lauderdale, Boca Raton and West Palm Beach and other cities on the eastern seaboard. Now, in an honest society that cared about sharing truth with its citizens, so they could make appropriate and timely and reasoned conclusions, let's move to a safer place, the governments, both city and state and federal government, could help to relocate people to a quality of life in a safer, more environmentally suitable area. But they won't do that because that would be political kryptonite. They would be voted out of office. They would have large lobbying groups such as the land developers and the recreation industries and the hotel and gambling interest and those who've already purchased massively expensive homes on the water. You would have to, in effect, go up against them. So we live in this duality, this cognitive disconnect, where we know that things are getting worse, and yet we're choosing to do nothing about it except to have a conference, to listen to Greta Thunberg scream at people, all the while living a life of duplicity. And this is the world we live in today. We're not addressing real problems, and yet the Great Reset says, oh, it's going to address all these problems. And yet the very members, the partners of the Great Reset with Klaus Schwab, these are all the polluters. These are the very people who would have to spend billions of dollars to tame down their energy sources and to get over to renewables. So we talk something that we don't actualize. Other countries in the world have made greater effort. In fact, Scotland is a good example, and some of the Netherlands, they're actually doing things. In fact, in some countries, more than 50% of their energy needs are done by renewables. In the United States, it's a tiny percent. It's under 10%. And yet, even here, we're not honest. What minerals do we take out of the ground under what conditions to make our computers, our cell phones? It's slave labor in Niger and other countries, in the Congo. What do we do to pollute the world to make solar panels? What do we do to pollute the world to make electric cars. Well, look at how much electricity it takes to have a pump where you can have an electric car. That's pollution. And yet we refuse to look at the totality of what we do. We live with euphemisms. We live with sloganeering that we're going to make everything electric. And at what cost to the environment? So we're not using geothermal, which is non-polluting, wouldn't take away from the earth, wave power, which is you've got your Great Lakes and you've got in the great rivers like the Mississippi River and the Missouri River and a clear around the Gulf of Mexico, the Atlantic and Pacific. We're not using those. We're not doing any of that. We're not doing bladeless wind turbines. Take a look at the bald eagles and other birds that are endangered that have been killed because of these gigantic energy-deficient wind farms that occur. If you want to put a wind farm out into the ocean, as Scotland did, where it's not a destruction, an eyesore to the environment or animals, that's one thing. But we're not looking at the downside of any of our choices. It's as if we do not have the capacity to see what happens when you vote for Trump or Biden, what happens when you engage in identity politics, what happens when you redline people based upon their ethnicity so they won't get a loan, what happens when you exploit people who cannot pay back everything at once and yet you charge them extra interest knowing full well that the person that is less likely to pay you back your credit card is the one that's most profitable to your bottom line because you're going to exploit them, taking them from 18% interest on a credit card that's due and you can't get the whole amount to 26% to 56% and a payday loan of 5,000 or 500% to 1,000% interest for something that a person couldn't afford to buy. And yet you let them buy knowing you could keep rolling over that loan because a person that buys a $300 couch, you'll make $3,000 in interest over it. That's our society. That's not a few people. That's not a couple. That's not a couple bad ads. That's the entirety of our whole society. And yet no one has the courage to call it out for its corruption, its lack of humanistic and spiritual values, its distrust of anything that represents common sense. And yet we have prostituted science. We have weaponized language. We have abandoned free speech or tried to outlaw it, where the government is all things, and now we think as bad as it is, with the Great Reset, where the government and corporations working together with big tech will control everything in your life, everything. You have no freedoms once the Great Reset is fully implemented, and the environment will get worse, but they don't care where you go, what you have to do when the planet, quote, the planet is drying faster than we thought, life science, quote, a triple threat of climate change, biodiversity loss, overpopulation is bearing down on Earth. As a result, trees by the hundreds of millions are being destroyed by beetles because of the climate change, yet the states are doing nothing. And which is the most corrupt state as far as, it's just, I have no words to describe my contempt for the politics of California and New York and New Jersey that pride themselves in the arrogance of their government and yet are so lacking in human values and doing anything meaningful for its citizens that improve the quality of its life or protect nature. Your thoughts, please.
Yes, Gary, you are absolutely right. I mean, you started out with water and went into the energy. And I mean, we are totally, totally in a dystopian world and there's no exception. This is absolutely the state of where we are and the corruption of where we are, as you said, and we refer to that as 193 countries are so corrupt that they play along with this game. But look at the water situation, which I've been, of course, working with all my career. Water is getting, the total amount of water is always going to be the same. But the drinking water is getting scarcer and scarcer because of we have absolutely no respect for the environment. So we pollute whenever we can pollute. And the little drinking water that is still left is being privatized. And it's being quietly privatized. It's being privatized, pushed along by international organizations like the World Bank, IMF, WTO, the regional development banks, they all tie, for example, a loan to a country to privatization of the water. For another example, in this privatization is a horrendous, you know, the Guarani. The Guarani aquifer in South America, most of which, about 72 or 3% of it, is underlying Brazil. And there's also Argentina and Uruguay and Paraguay are part of it. It's the huge, it's the biggest sweetwater aquifer in the world that could supply human beings with about 100 liters per capita per day for the next 200 years. It's an amazing amount of water. Who goes and has started the negotiations already during, I think it was during the 2019 WEF World Economic Forum in Davos. They have negotiated with Bolsonaro behind closed doors to privatize the Guarani aquifer. That's Nestle and Coca-Cola. They have gone back in the meantime, and I don't know how far these negotiations are, but knowing Bolsonaro, there's no problem for privatizing whatever he can. So, and this is going on clandestinely behind our scenes. Cities do the same negotiations for their water supply to the citizens. They're going to be privatized. Suddenly the citizen wakes up and sees, well, there's no longer the municipality that sends the bill. It's a private company that sends me the bill. So all of this makes water scarcer and more expensive. And of course, again, those people who are already suffering from reduced salaries and from reduced incomes, they will suffer even more. And in the meantime, you know, we're talking about credits for pollution. Well, you know, you mentioned the electric cars. This is a very, very good example. The electric cars or the solar panels, the amount of carbon they consume and the amount of pollution they create. We in the neoliberal world have created a term for this pollution or for all these costs, which is called externalities. You know, the neoliberals, they call everything they don't want to diminish their profit an externality, which means that the environment or the people, in fact, they pay for it. And this is an externality. You compare, for example, an electric car, which is the owner of the electric car thinks, oh, he washes his hands and is clean and I'm doing something for the environment. Bullshit. What he is doing is actually creating more pollution because an electric car's efficiency, energy efficiency, is about 35 or 37% on average. Whereas, you know, the normal cars we have them now, I'm not promoting that. I'm to the contrary. I'm not saying that we should continue using hydrocarbons, but at least the efficiency vis-a-vis energy is about between 75 and 80%, depending on the type of car. So you have there already an enormous gap, which people do not understand. If we find, as you mentioned, a few possibilities of creating sustainable energy, if we find a way, we put more of our research into sustainable energy resources instead of into the military industrial complex, then we may be able to create enough energy from solar, from wind, from water power, from wave power. You know, all of that is available. And I think the biggest source that we have is the sun. But yet nobody really invests in what would be, for example, photosynthesis is what the plants do, which has an energy efficiency of, I think it's about 95 to 97%. If we can do that, then why couldn't we do that? Maybe I've heard and read that Einstein has had actually the solution, but obviously these papers, they have disappeared. They were bought up or were destroyed by the hydrocarbon company. But if we reach that level, that we can be autosufficient with energy that doesn't need to burn coal and that doesn't need to destroy the environment, then we are talking. But in the meantime, we are just shifting, and this is the new Green Deal. For me, it's just painting the old capitalism green and calling it the new Green Deal. It's nothing else but even a more extreme neoliberal capitalism. So with all of this going on and people not knowing about it, because, of course, nobody tells them, the media are bought by the corporations and they propagate this as being the greatest thing since sliced bread, you know, the new Green Deal. And those are Democrats in the United States, so-called liberal and progressive Democrats who promote something like that, which is nothing else but the more extreme capitalism painted green. So as long as we keep doing this and without opening the eyes of what's going on and protecting the environment and doing something, really doing something, investing into research so that we can actually become self-sufficient with energy, which is renewable, and not having to resort to coal and to other environmental destructive energies, then we can talk. And I think this is what people do not understand. And if they start understanding that privatizing water doesn't help, that that electric cars as we know them today don't count, doesn't really matter, and that using every year a new cell phone doesn't help the environment, and so on, then we start talking, and then maybe we could be turning around. But we have, they're rushing, you know, they're rushing this great reset. They have 10 years, that's the plan, 10 years to implement it, and 10 years go very, very fast. If people are being manipulated into getting used to masks, into getting used to not talking to each other and to work from home, kids not being educated properly because they're not allowed to go to school, or if they go to school, they are breathing their own the CO2 because of the masks and so on. It's very destructive. So all of this is part of a plan that we have to understand. We have to see the big picture. And once we see that, then maybe we can start thinking and say, no, this cannot go on. We have to stop. We the people are finally, you know, we are much more than them. We are 99.99% or more. And so we cannot allow that to continue. If that happens, but we have to get that message out. And I think you're doing a great job, Gary, in doing that.
Thank you. Final issue I'd like for you to discuss, please, and that is, because we have about 4 minutes left, when you look at the world today and you look at how much suffering is occurring by the average class, even the professional class now, many of them, their jobs are being decimated by downsizing and artificial intelligence and automation. And yet we have yet to have a national dialogue, at least in the United States, I don't know about other countries, about what is the purpose of education today that does not first ask the basic questions. Will your job exist in the future? If there is a job for you, will it be able to pay enough for you to live and pay back your student debt? Otherwise, you'll be in debt servitude for the rest of your life. And which are the careers most likely to be gone or substantially diminished, leaving a permanent underemployed or unemployed class? And then take a look at Los Angeles, take a look at New York, and take a look at San Francisco as examples of what happens when people can no longer support themselves and fall into impoverished conditions.
Yes, this is of course a very good question, and you're absolutely right. Nowhere, not in Switzerland, not in any of that I know, not in any European Union country, this dialogue takes place of what's the future of our next generations. What do they do? And especially now would be the time to think about it. You know, with this probably without the Great Reset, there's some things that will never go back to normal. So we have to think of what are we going to do next, and we have to consider also that, for example, everything, I mean, this is part of the Great Reset. This is part of the 2010 Rockefeller report, that everything will be digitized. So all these jobs that are now not digitized, that depend on labor, on real labor, or on people sitting on a desk and doing something, will be taken over. If we don't stop it, will be taken over by a robot or by algorithms. Already today, lots of things that we do not even know are being done by algorithms. So what are our kids? What is the future of our kids? And this is not being considered at all by any of the countries that I can think of, and especially now where kids stay home and they can't go to school and they have to do either homeschooling, which some of the parents have started doing because they don't trust in the Zoom kind of school class. And others, they try hard to get along and to do something, but it's never the same when you're not confronted and accompanied by your colleagues. So this is a big, big problem. We will have an uneducated youth. We will have the next generation will be not educated enough to carry on new jobs or even to invent new jobs, because all of those jobs, or a big portion of those jobs, which were actually described very well in the Great Reset, will be gone. So people have to start thinking about it. It's our duty to start thinking about it and making our kids. Drawing their attention to the fact that they have to start thinking of what the future will be, and we have to help them into a new future. And especially we have to also make sure that not everything is going to be digitized, because if all our money is being digitized, you know, and that's really the plan, and it's going very, very fast. I can see that. And if this is going to happen, you will have absolutely no control anymore over your income. You cannot do with it what you want, and you're being controlled, because if you don't behave the way the system wants you to behave, if you don't follow the official narrative, they can block your bank account. They can stop you.
Peter, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you very much. Peter Koenig is in Switzerland. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening.
Mother, mother, there's too many.